Welcome to the Woodridge Community Outreach Podcast. This is a great opportunity to learn about the organizations and individuals that are working to meet the needs of our community. For more information about our church or local outreach efforts, visit woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast. Good morning. I have Chris and Jennifer Bathurst today just to talk about something that is definitely near and dear to both of our hearts, just foster care, adoption, and what that looks like. Chris and Jennifer are members of Woodridge, and so I'm just going to let them introduce kind of themselves and their family and maybe a little bit of background information. So go ahead.
Well, thank you, Heather. We're excited to be here. I'm Chris, and I have my wife.
Hello, Jennifer here.
And we have 7 children now.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel that way.
Current count.
Yeah, current count. So, yes, we have 2 biological kids that are older. One's in college, one's in high school. And then we did infant adoption. That's 6 years old. Infant adoption, that's 5 years old.
Right.
And then we got a sibling group of 3 children. And that they're all younger than the 5-year-old. We're thinking if we step back into the space, we're going to kind of fill the gap.
Right.
And
didn't choose to fill the gap.
Right. So were originally thinking you were going to go between that 6 and that high school age.
Yes.
But
the plans, we think.
Right. And you originally were thinking adopting from foster care and ended up, which we'll talk a little bit about that kind of as we get further into the story, because y'all's is a little bit different niche in the adoptive world.
Yeah.
That seems to be our pattern, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of people that have our story, that's
right.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, it's a great story.
Yeah. So the little kids right now is 6, 5, 4, 3, and 1.
Right.
Yes.
So 5
yes.
under the age of 6.
Correct.
Correct.
Yes. Which is fun.
Oh, yes.
I mean, is one word for it.
Chaos?
Is that yes. It?
Yeah.
Controlled chaos or maybe just chaos?
There's no control.
Control.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So you adopted the 2 from birth. So that, yeah, you could have those for 5 and 6. And then you had a gap and kind of God just put more on your heart to do more than you are already doing, which...
Yeah, I think for us, it's just kind of one of those things where, like, when we stepped into the space, we had a vision of what we thought it would look like.
Right.
And then God said, ha-ha, uh-huh. And here, let me show you where the needs are.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, we both crave control. And one thing we've continued to learn that will probably be the theme throughout this podcast for us is just the, we have no control.
We have no control, except to just say yes.
Yep.
We just say yes and the next step and what that is.
Yep.
Yeah.
We feel like if we talk about it and if God puts on both our hearts, hey, there's capacity there, we don't have all the ways of figuring out what it will look like and how it'll pan out. It's more of just the trust.
Yeah. And I think you guys talked a little bit, or with me, you had talked before about just how life has changed for you with all of these additions.
Yes. You want to take that?
Well, you know, it's just the normal where if we had 2 kids and they were, you know, late elementary, early middle school, and we could travel and we could do things. And it's almost, I think part of the reason there is such a big gap is we were going through that process of almost grieving the loss of that life, which is just the culturally acceptable life, I guess, mm-hmm. You know, and into, we know we're going to have to give up some things, not everything.
That was about before you brought in.
Before we brought in even the infant adoption kids, you know, it's just we knew that was the path we were called to go down. And it just took us a minute to realize there's going to be a change in our comfort level. There's going to be a change in our control. There's going to be, you know, not that we have control over older kids anyway, but there is, I think we knew life was going to change drastically and there was going to be a lot of sacrifice.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think as we talk through it, it was one of those where, you know, we go through like, why should we not adopt? Mm-hmm. And one minute Jennifer would be on board and I wouldn't, and next minute I'd be on board and she wouldn't. And so it took a while for us to get in the same place. But I would say as you ran through the why would I not adopt, for me, a lot of it was selfish. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was like, we can travel, they can potty themselves.
Right. Like, I mean, it is true when you get to that kind of, especially older elementary and up, they can
self-sufficiency
do quite a bit. Right.
Yes.
Very nice.
And so really it came down to two things, which was we have two biological kids that are doing well. How will this impact them?
Right.
Right.
And then how will this impact our marriage? And those are two of the things that we couldn't answer that we just had to step in faith in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that was, those kept being the hinge points for us. Like of really, like we had to press into God to trust him that he wants for us to pursue him.
Right.
And that being obedient to God and him having a good life for us doesn't necessarily mean comfort or success as the world defines it. Or easy. Yeah, certainly
right.
not easy.
Certainly not
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, he's not calling us to easy. He's calling us to obedience. And knowing he'll be faithful and he's sovereign and he's good.
Yes.
And so, I guess your heart, and that's the thing, like with adoption, for those who aren't as familiar in the area, you kind of have different options. You have what I think a lot of people think is kind of what you guys did, which is domestic adoptions from birth, you know, where a birth mom goes in and says, hey, for whatever reason, I need help. And so that's what you guys did with your first two. There's also adopting from foster care. And then there's also international adoptions. So kind of are the three main routes. So you guys worked with a local adoption agency.
Yes.
AIM Adoptions, which Chris, you're also on the board.
I am.
So
yes.
With that, and I guess maybe just a little bit about working with maybe adoption agencies and kind of what they do.
Yeah, so I think different adoption agencies are almost kind of like you almost have to date and find the right fit.
Right.
You know, like the adoption agency that we use is a very small adoption agency, and we felt it was very personalized and very loving, but mainly functions in the Houston area.
Right.
You know, you're not going to have like, hey, look, there's this baby in Detroit and you live in Texas. You know, it's more Houston is where they mainly draw from. And so it just kind of depends on what it is. With that, you're also maybe going to have a little bit of a longer wait time depending on what you're looking for.
Right.
And they have two arms. One arm is, you know, the infant adoption, which,
most people know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other arm that they do is kind of a matched adoption. The children in foster care, all the rights have been terminated.
Right.
They're just waiting for a forever home.
And usually those are a little bit older kiddos.
Yep. Those tend to be older.
Right.
And, you know, and you have to step into that space knowing that there's a little bit more history.
Right.
All of us, as we all get older, we have history.
Yeah. No.
So.
I mean, I think what I love too, and I know, you know, many agencies do this, but there is counseling for the birth mothers and just support on both ends. So we receive support and training. The birth moms and birth families receive support and training and resources. And so
even Bible studies for the birth
moms. And Bible studies for birth moms. And so it really is a family, and we feel like we could call our caseworker with anything and she'd be able to help guide us into, like, if there's something that we needed, or we know that she can get in touch with our birth moms if needed. And so
yes,
that's great.
And so I guess maybe just a little bit of, you've talked a little bit about what initially got you guys thinking even adoption. I think, I mean, I don't know, you have guys in your notes, living intentionally. Is that kind of what drove, or is that kind of what drove your second set of adoptions?
Well, I know we had always envisioned having a large family. Maybe not this large,
not
but
this
that's,
large.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, a normal large.
What's a normal large?
Yeah, normal's a
three, four. Maybe it was like that seemed like a huge number back in the day.
And just because of health issues with myself and pregnancy, we knew we were not going to have more, and we were okay with that because we knew there were children that needed stability and needed homes, a sense of permanency. And so I think that's what got us started on that route. And then along with that, I'd say we were in a church also that was very for foster care and surrounding ourselves with people that are like-minded.
Yeah. Like I feel like a lot of times I don't hear many stories of people that enter this space that just enter this space. There was somebody that they engaged with that talked about it or did something. And so for us, we're in a church, we saw people doing it.
Right.
We saw the challenges that they went through, the training mm-hmm. they went through. I'd even say, like, when I was growing up, my family always hosted foreign exchange students. Mm-hmm. And just that concept of somebody being in your home, being treated as a family member, mm-hmm. It just kind of, like, changes your perspective on what does family look like. And so I think, like Jennifer was saying, we kind of thought we'd have a larger family, and then God said maybe not this way, and so we kind of were kind of battling with what does that look like. So we're always kind of like had our toes in the space, whether like helping friends out.
I'd say the entry point for us too is like, okay, certified babysitter. That was, you know, through Arrow and helping some friends out, and mm-hmm. that was our other than what we were thinking of what the space of foster care looked like, that was our entry point.
Right.
Was like, well, we can do that, you know, that we can do. And so, and just from there, I think it's the proximity to the situation. And then you start hearing the stories and seeing the people and interacting with the kids and everything that you had imagined of what foster care or adoption would look like was completely turned upside down.
And I think sometimes, and you guys can speak to this a little bit without, you know, I think violating any kind of, oh, I don't want to share that or not share that. But you guys have done it because you've adopted, not necessarily from foster care, but almost. I mean, they're experiencing some of the same, they've experienced some of the same trauma because they were older that maybe kiddos who would have been.
Yes. Like our three youngest ones were on a path to enter foster care and CPS care.
We were just a stop before that.
We were a stop before that. Mm-hmm. And that stop eventually led to us adopting them.
Right.
But it again was one of those spaces where it's like, it's easy to go through this world with your blinders on.
Right.
It's easy to ignore these things going on around you. And then once kind of like those blinders get removed, you start going, it is pervasive and everywhere.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's always, you have to see the need. And once you see the need and you see the faces and you hear the stories and their actual children and their families and you learn more and more. That's the thing I feel like I've learned the most out of all of this. It's just not just the kids, but the families that surround the kids of the vulnerability and the trauma and the generational trauma.
Generational cycles. And it's so many factors.
I think, too, like one of the things that I always like to bring up is that for us, we're always wowed at the fact of our particular situation of the courage of these moms.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whether from infant to our youngest three, it's a mom stepping up and saying, I can't do this and I want something better. And the capacity of that love for that child, I think, is overshadowed more by people taking more of the perspective of like, I could never do that.
Right.
Well, you were never in that situation. You don't know what you would do, but this person loved enough to do that. And I think that's the one thing, that's one of the biggest things revealed to me through our particular journey is just the courage that it takes to allow somebody to care for your children.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, I know I've heard before there, some people don't like the term, they gave their baby up. And I don't know that they are. I think they're choosing something different for their baby, and they will always be their mom.
Yeah.
They will always have
100%,
carried that baby. They will always have birthed that baby. They will always, they're a part of them. And so I think it's just a courageous, and I think there's space for both. There's space, you know, to honor that and to still, you know, honor the people, you know, the adoptive parents that are parenting. To me, it's a very selfless choice.
Yeah.
And knowing the grief and the burden.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those where it's unfathomable to me that anybody could look at, in today's day and age, how easy it'd be for a mom to say, I'm not going down this road.
Right.
To, I will traumatize my body. I will carry this child. And then I will sacrificially allow somebody to care for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's hard. And I think you guys talk about proximity to vulnerable. And I think that's what you've been saying when your eyes are opened. But I guess also I know for you guys, y'all are probably like us in that we wanted our older kiddos to also experience proximity to the vulnerable, knowing right. even what that might look like for them. You guys want to speak to that a little bit?
Well, I think, you know, as Chris said earlier, going into it, the two things that we couldn't control, how will this affect our older children and how will this affect our marriage? And for our older children, I've seen so much compassion from them, and they've seen a lot more than their peers of the world and outside of our area. And I think it has definitely opened up their eyes, and I'm proud of the way that they have learned to interact and to see things differently. So just thankful that that's been, yeah. I mean, we don't, they have their, you know, they do their things. They're kids too, yeah. right? They're still kids too. So,
right.
But they're willing to jump in. And I think I've been surprised and I have loved how they interact. I mean, our kids just love, the little kids love the big kids.
Yeah.
It's really a fun relationship.
I think too, watching, because our children were, you know, late elementary-ish when we entered this space, mm-hmm. and now watching them as they grow into young adults, you know, I mean, you have a daughter in college who's choosing to take her free college time and volunteer at a foster closet mm-hmm. and help out children in the area where she's at, and I don't think that she would have even known that that was there.
Right.
Or mm-hmm. that she could do that, or that it would have purpose. And then you have just the fact that, you know, we're a multiracial family, mm-hmm. and the conversations we have now.
Right.
Like, when you look at what's gone through since we've entered this space, like, from, you know, George Floyd or anything else, like, right. the whole BLM movement, and what does that look like to us and our family and to our children, and them asking those questions. Like, these are deep conversations mm-hmm. that press us into us understanding, like, where are we at? What do we, you know, what does this look like? And so I think it's just been an awesome chance to be able to open our eyes, open their eyes mm-hmm. to more of the world, to the vulnerable, to those that are lost, to those that are hurting, to those that are oppressed. And it's just been phenomenal from right. that perspective.
I think something too to kind of hit on, because again, it's unique to y'all situation, and you can speak to it more than maybe others probably could, is I think sometimes there is this myth out there that when you adopt babies from birth, that there's, you know, everything's great and grand and there's not any, you know, trauma or whatever, because you got them from birth to love on them. And you guys are, you've got some that you adopted from birth and you've got some that you did not adopt from birth, and I know you can speak to there's trauma involved in both, because
trauma all around.
Yes.
But yes, so and I like to equate it to, even with our biological kids, there are things that have come right. up, you know. And so with our infant adoptions, both of them, there was some prenatal trauma, and we do know that, and that does play out to a certain extent. I don't.
And there's things we're discovering every day. I think one of the unique things, like with our particular adoption agency, they had us do this one activity, mm-hmm. right. where it's like a big chart where it's like, do you have any aunts, uncles, cousins, parents with this disease, that disease? Did these drugs? Did that drug? Has this psychiatric disorder? And you fill out this whole chart, and they go, we're not asking for this, give it to each other. And they go, you fell in love with this person, you got married, a lot of you have had children or have been trying to have children with this person not knowing any of this. Mm-hmm. But now you expect a birth mom to share all this with you, and you're gonna say, no, I don't want that child because of.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, both Jennifer and I shared our things with each other, and I think both our eyes were open, like, oh, that's in your family. Okay, then. And so, you know, even with that, it's like we have two biological children that we brought into this world.
Right.
with those histories. And so
to expect anything different from anybody else.
Yes.
You know,
everybody has a storied life. Mm-hmm. And so,
so it is a myth.
Even down to the fact of like trying to soothe
right.
a 6-month-old in the car, and then suddenly you change radio stations and that soothes them. Wow, that's a very loud, rocking song. I thought you'd like a lullaby.
Right.
And you think to yourself, I don't know why that would soothe you. The only thing I can think of is maybe
you
that's
heard that.
The type of music you heard when you're in utero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's what they talk about with kiddos coming from foster care about one of the things they'll tell you not to fight is food battles, for instance. Like, especially when they're early on in your home. If they want chips, give them chips, because maybe that's what they're used to. So it's a little bit of comfort. Because that was something that's known in this whole new world of unknown, you know. Mm-hmm. Little things. But again, you don't know any of that. You're kind of guessing. But
hey, we all have our comfort mm-hmm. food.
We do. Yes.
And so, you know, I have mine. It's just
mine's a Diet Coke with extra ice, but usually with a salty snack.
Yeah.
I guess some of this you guys have hit on, but what would you want others to know based on just kind of where you're at now, what you've learned?
Or what we thought we knew that
right?
we didn't know.
Yeah, well, that's a whole big list,
that
at least
is a
for
list.
Me.
Do you want to start with that?
Sure, I'll start. I would say the biggest thing is our children and everybody's children, they're people too.
Right.
They have ears. If you have questions, like, I have no problem engaging in conversation,
right.
but be conscientious of what's around you. I mean, to approach our multi-ethnic large family and be like, are they all yours? Oh, that has to be twins. Oh, there's no way that they're all yours.
Well, I think
it's an awkward thing to right. then have to explain to 65432 or
right.
65431. Sorry, I threw one in there. I don't need another one.
We don't have room in the car for another one. So,
yeah, what
I think to just we have learned to, especially as we're getting into school age now, to engage the teachers ahead of the school year. We always like to give them a heads up. This is who they are, and this is what they know as far as like their mm-hmm. adoption
right.
journey. So we don't want the teachers to be in a uncomfortable situation if somebody says, oh, you're adopted, and the teacher's like, I don't know what to say or how to
right.
answer that, you know. And so we always give them words of like, here's where they're at and what they know and kind of what you might hear from them. And with one of ours, I have to be like, and yes, it is true, you know, because she tends to tell stories. But
that sound far-fetched, but they're not
right. So
and even if you're doing a family tree project.
Right. That's
right.
a common
There's
one.
There's a lot of, complicated kind of things. And we just want to make sure the teachers know it's an open dialogue, that we're open to questions or concerns, you know, that they may have or things that may come up.
And I would say even that their story is their story.
Right.
I mean, even our older kids don't know all the story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's not their story.
Right.
And so we've had to put up boundaries, which we've learned are good. I'm a people pleaser by nature,
mm-hmm.
so I tend to overshare. And I've had to learn how to create those boundaries, even with, like, grandparents and things like that, of just, like, that's for them to know one day, but right. not for you.
Mm-hmm. I feel that, especially, like, in being on staff at times, but then also trying to, you feel like you're a steward of this space, like foster care and adoption, so you're wanting to educate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I also feel like I probably err on the side of too much. It's easier though with mine being smaller and younger, I think, but only because I also want to educate them on birth families and all this that's stacked against them, because I think especially with foster care space, people have this this negative view a lot of times of birth parents.
Mm-hmm.
And while yes, they have usually made not great choices, when you learn about their situations and some of, again, their generational trauma, or even in some of the adult cases, abuse or what they've experienced, it's like they got a lot stacked against them.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you come alongside and how can you support? And I think you guys are good, especially with the right perspective on how are you or what are your role is as adoptive parents, and even supporting and honoring the choice that birth parents made. Because I feel like when I overshare, it's with that in mind of trying to change the stereotypes or trying to educate a little bit somewhat.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Sometimes I stop myself and I'm like, if you just knew what I knew.
Right.
Yeah.
You would look at this situation differently.
Right.
And that goes down to everything of how we parent these kids versus our other kids, and their needs are different, and just, you know, it boils down to everything and every decision that we make throughout the day and leaves people guessing why.
And I would say too, like, you know, people might see you like they're going to say hurtful things to you.
Right.
And I see a lot of people like, oh, my kid would never talk to me that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you're expecting someone that's been through what they've been through to be neurotypical and have a typical response to discipline, education, consequences. Right. So when they say something hurtful to me, it hurts, but I still love them.
Right.
And I mean, and to me, it points to the gospel of like, listen, we sin. That hurts Christ, and he still died for us. He still loved us. And so it's one of those where, again, as people start to engage in the space, I think they can start to see a little bit more of those, like, oh, I can see how you're letting that particular child act that way, because that's not the time or the place to try to correct that in this situation.
Yeah, and I think even just sometimes I just want to say, please don't ask why you have them.
Yeah.
Because obviously there something happened. Somebody didn't, you know, maybe choice-wise or whatever. Yes, there were some negative choices along the way that got them where they're at. But at the same time, please don't put me in the position to feel like I have to try to help you understand, but also not give away too much information. And I hear all, you know, are they going back? Are they whatever? And a lot of times we don't know those answers. And it's not really our, at least foster care wise, it's not our job to know those answers. Mm-hmm. It's our job to love them and care for them while they're in our home and help them heal, hopefully. But that's the always. But I struggle because I know that so many do not have, they don't see it like we see it. And they don't have, they haven't been in it to see it how we see it.
I think too, we have learned to become such advocates for, I think, vulnerable, our children, of course, but vulnerable people in that space across the board. And whether it be access to resources or education or, you know, just, it's more than just a surface level of meeting a need.
Right.
And so I think we have learned to really speak up for what we think is right, what we think they need. And we're learning along the way. We go into this and we're like, we have no clue. Like, we are not super parents by any means. We just, a lot of times I say we take it day by day, but sometimes it's hour by hour. And, you know, you're just trying to figure out what does this kid need, or how are we going to approach this? Or, you know, it's a lot of leaning on God and trusting, because we can't do it on our own. I think,
I would say it's one of those two where it's like there's a lot of days where we'll look at each other and be like, we made it. Meaning they're alive and in bed.
Yeah.
Part of it is the age, right? There's a lot of little people in our house.
So, and that is unfortunately, I mean, it's a season that you survive, it feels like, when you're in it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will say, just to be very clear, if you're listening to this, if you're waiting till you're ready to enter the space, you will never be ready.
Right. Well, it's like anytime you have kids, are you, I mean, we always, like, we have something you'll tell to other families who are just going to maybe have a family in a traditional manner is you're never going to be ready because it's such a big change. But to add then into the, you know, the other variables as well. But no, we're not, I think, we're not super parents. I mean, we spend enough time together that you probably see me yell at my children. I'm going to lose it at time to time. I'm not going to do all of the trauma-informed parenting approaches that I should the vast majority of the time. And we don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And nor should we have all the answers, nor does anybody expect us to have all the answers.
But we do have a community to lean on and to support each other. I think that is super helpful to bring back the perspective, to encourage.
And sometimes just to know someone else is struggling too.
Yeah.
Like hearing somebody else's struggles lets you go, we're not alone in this. Mm-hmm. We're struggling too. So I feel your struggle. I don't have any answers.
Right.
Like, I'm not here to offer any answers except just go, oh yeah, I feel you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that gets to the question a little bit too of what would you tell people that are thinking about entering this space?
I think coming from recovering type A personalities, to not think of the end point. It's just, what is the next step? What is the next one thing I can do to enter into this space? And whether that's just inquiring with an agency, you know, becoming a certified babysitter. I think if you try to get all the details, it's never going to go the way that you plan or that you want. But it's going to go the way that God plans and He wants. And so I think it's just stepping out in faith and just doing that one next step. I mean, call us up. We'll go have a cup of coffee with you. You know, like, more than happy to share and to...
Even what does that look like? There's some
or come over that, to our house.
Yeah. I mean, and freely will tell people. There's some people that probably shouldn't have kids in their home. But there's a space for you to do something. And I think, like, and you probably heard it too, some people be like, oh, you're saints. And it's
No.
Again, come on over.
Please don't.
We're trying to be obedient.
Right.
And so I'd say to Jennifer's point of just taking that next step, pray and think what God's calling you to do, and are you going to be obedient to that?
Right.
And take the next step into whatever that is.
And I think that's the thing. If you at all feel a tug or just want to know more, then talk to a family. I mean, here at least at Woodridge, we have several families that have done, I mean, we're blessed with people that have adopted internationally. We are blessed with people that have adopted special needs. We've had people that have adopted from birth. We have people that have adopted from foster care. We have people that just foster. Like, we have it all that you could kind of talk to, and there are different parts along the process as well to even know, oh man, you've been doing this for only this long versus you've been doing this forever, and oh, you have older kiddos and you have younger kids. And so it, because I know that's kind of, I mean, we started a little bit. I mean, A, we were around people that introduced us just to the problem, I think, and the need, and then visiting with folks that had done it. And then again, just taking that next step. And I think you and I were both at that mindset. We don't expect anybody to, oh, I'm interested, and then the next day start the process. I mean, for us, it took several years just to kind of even narrow it down and kind of.
Yeah, I think there's very few people that, I don't know anybody who suddenly it clicked and I'm like, we're all in.
Right.
Right, it's a process.
Yeah.
I think you definitely have to, a lot of things to consider to go into it, but just, yeah.
And I think this is a bigger question too. You already addressed how it kind of has affected your bio kids, but one, a couple things, and we're kind of gearing up or getting towards the end, but how has this, I guess, affected your marriage? That was one of the things you had talked about, how you weren't sure, but, and then also, how has it, I mean, how has your view of God changed? Has it brought you closer to God? Has it, maybe those two questions.
I'd like to start off by saying we're still married.
Yes, you are. So,
no, I mean, for me, it's really opened up the concept of, like, Jennifer and I have to be communicating. Right. We're in constant communication, doing a better job expressing our needs to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I need right now to be able to continue to
function in a healthy manner.
Yes. And so I feel like the communication and the open dialogue has strengthened our marriage. I'd also say it's pressed us more into God, because again, we crave control. We have no control. So help me understand and accept this. And I'd say the other big thing is stepping up. Like, we almost don't need to express in words when it's been that day. Right. And it's your turn.
You can just see it in your face.
Yes. It's your turn.
It's your turn.
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree to all that. As far as that, how it maybe has changed our view of God, I don't know if it...
It may not.
Has
it may
changed. Have, I think right. It's grown us closer, more of a reliance and a dependence. It's made God more real to us, just to see... you know, just looking back over the last almost 7 years since we started this, how God has orchestrated either the timing of things or provided what we needed when we needed it, all the things that we tend to worry about have just been taken care of. Now, we still worry about plenty, but just meaning a path has been laid for us. And because we're on the path that God wants us to be on, he's helped us down that road for sure.
I think it's the, for me, it's, I see his provision more because you need it more.
Yeah.
I mean, you are relying on him. So that's to me, that becomes more real because while he's always there and we always know he's, you know, at work, it is more evident because it's almost when you're at those, especially at those like, God, I don't know that we can, you know, we can keep doing this. And then something happens and you're like, okay, I guess we can. And you know that that was God. Like, it's not a, oh, that was me. It couldn't have been. Like, there's no way I could have done that.
Yeah. And I think too, it's just, it's made the gospel more real. The whole concept of being adopted into the body of Christ and like what that means to be grafted into a tree and like seeing like even like, the first time we went on a trip and we're at the airport and somebody said, is this your child? And my oldest daughter goes, that's my brother. Mm-hmm. Like with big attitude. And I'm like, that's right. We're family now. And that understanding of what it is, just really the gospel from that perspective. And I touched on this earlier too, is when they say those hurtful things, but I still love them. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, the love of Christ.
Well, his grace is sufficient.
Yeah. I mean, how much I've sinned and hurt and caused the cross to happen myself and we as a people, and to know that he loved us enough and said, hey, I forgive you and I want you here.
And I think it's that, for me, it's the Emmanuel, the God with us. But, I mean, like he willingly entered into our brokenness. And that's kind of what you choose to do. When you enter this space, is you are choosing to enter into the broken, which we're all broken. That's the thing. Like, we think we have this picture and that's that false sense of control. Mm-hmm. In reality, we're all broken vessels. Yes. Yeah. Sometimes I think they're carrying a little bit, maybe more baggage than folks of us that have been raised in somewhat healthy households.
We can hide it better.
Yeah. Or we can numb it better, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's, it has, in that way, for me, it's made the gospel more real. And so one of the things we did talk about a little bit, Chris, you talked a little bit about Board of AIM Adoptions. Jennifer, you kind of run or oversee our foster adoptive support group. You want to talk a little bit about that?
So our foster adopt group meets here at Woodbridge the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 6:30. And it's a group of families, anyone, everyone is welcome, from I'm just thinking about this to very seasoned foster families. And so we have the whole gamut of people there. And we are currently going through a book called Parenting Children of Trauma. Last semester, we went through Reframing Foster Care with Jason Johnson. And so we just talk a little bit about the book, what we're reading, and then we spend some time just encouraging each other, praying, updating on where we are in the process or how our kids are doing. And if there's needs, you know, we help meet needs. And it's really, we've been on a break because of the holidays, and then coming back We just had our group last night, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, we do need this. We do. Yeah. We do need each other. And just, we can all be frustrated in a room together because of, you know, what our kids are going through.
Kids or system or...
Yeah, just, and it's hard. And but we all are trying to, you know, take the next step together. We're still taking next steps. I mean, for people to think that we're done because we've adopted these kids. I mean, still have a long, long road to go.
Have we ever done any time we're parenting? I don't know. I don't think so. I think my parents, when they say parenting adult children, is almost harder than they parenting regular children. We're not there yet. Oh, I mean, y'all are starting to get there.
We're entering into that, and that's an interesting space. That's probably another podcast.
Yeah.
Brace
yourself.
You do. I don't know that we've cried together as much, but we laugh a whole lot. You can laugh at the hard together. Yeah. But what I love about our group is it's my perspective. Like, it helps me shift my perspective to where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. It reminds us as to the why. It reminds us, also even helping us to define how we view success in this space, because it's not how other people would probably view successful parenting from time to time, like what your end point is. But even that, because it is hard, and you do sometimes shoulder that burden of, oh man, I'm not doing enough, or I need to do more. And it's just good reminders when, no, you are.
One other thing about the our foster group, child care is provided.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
The other thing too, I think that I think back on is John Piper wrote a book, Don't Waste Your Life, and it kind of starts off with like guys just kind of retired, walking across the beach, casting seashells in the ocean. It's like, is this really what you want from life? And just that concept of like, God made us to work. And what does that look like even into whatever age you enter into? Right. Like, and for us, we've chosen that this is a space we want to work in.
Right. It's just that living intentionally. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't have to be this space. There's lots of opportunities. And that's one of the hopes of the podcast, is to kind of raise awareness and help you see all the variety of different ways that you can, the spaces that you can work in, and dive in. And I think that's, I don't know, I think anytime that God is asking you or you feel called to do something that is not comfortable, then for at least in my own personal life, those have been the opportunities where I've seen God the most. And this is just the space that has done that.
For us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I say find your space.
Yeah.
And get to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else that you guys would like to touch on or folks to know? Or?
Oh, you have something.
I don't. I mean, I can come up with something.
No. Right. I think we're good.
More than likely, if you are pursuing Christ, you're rubbing against what society's telling you to do.
Yeah, just something kind of countercultural.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, society's directing you towards get comfortable. Like, why would you disrupt this comfort? Like, pursue calm, pursue peace. And those are all good things. But sometimes they're not the right thing for you.
Right. And that's something that you pray through. God will make it clear.
Yeah.
He'll make it clear. Mm-hmm. So... Well, thank you guys, because this is time when all of your children are not here and you're choosing to spend it with me. Thank you.
No, it's been good. Thank you, Heather.
It's been good. It's sometimes refreshing to retell our story so that we can...
It puts the perspective back for us, too.
Remind us of where we've been.
How long it's been.
Yeah.
Yes. And that you've survived.
Yeah.
And there's even growth, and you can laugh and you can smile about it. And
yes.
Yeah. That's all great. Well,
and love each other.
And we're still married.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Heather.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. For more information about Woodridge or our local outreach efforts, please visit our website at woodridge.org. Thanks for listening.